Hi, I'm your host, Kurt Bruner, and I'm very excited about what I get to share with you today. Dr. J. Otis Ledbetter is my dear friend. He's also been a mentor for me in my marriage and as a parent. He was my co-author of a book called Your Heritage, which was the foundation of a ministry we launched helping parents become intentional about passing faith and a strong legacy to the next generation. And in fact, what you're going to hear is the two of us, a portion of the two of us presenting to a church on that very theme. As you'll hear Otis reference, my wife Olivia was very close with the Ledbetter family. And in fact, part of the story is I had to ask Otis for permission to marry her because she didn't have a father of her own and she had kind of been adopted into their family. So I'm real excited for you to hear this presentation that we're titling, We All Wear Hand-Me-Downs.
To tell you about myself briefly, I was raised in the Midwest, Christian family, seven children. I was the middle child. I have two boys now. My wife Olivia and I have been married 11 years, just past 11 years. And 6 years ago, our firstborn son, Kyle, was born. I remember the experience, first of all, of the whole childbirth experience and seeing that life come about. But then to hold for the first time, once they clean up the baby, to hold Kyle and look him in the face was such an awesome realization of the responsibility of parenthood, that I'm responsible as the father to shape and influence his life. Wasn't too long into the parenting process, perhaps a year, year and a half, 2 years old, that I saw some of his behaviors, some of his attitudes, some of his actions, and I realized the sobering realization that my oldest son inherited a sin nature from my wife. The truth is, and if you'll turn in our first passage, is our main passage actually, Deuteronomy 5, verses 9 and 10. The truth is, we've all inherited a sin nature. We've all received, if you will, hand-me-downs from the human family that trace all the way back to Adam and the choices that were made there. We've all inherited a propensity towards evil. And because of that, we're all in this boat together in terms of dealing with the struggles of having a sin nature, dealing with the fallout of those realities. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 9 and 10. I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. A principle that's true in all aspects of life, and it is simply this: we all wear hand-me-downs. We are all part of a particular family cycle. If you want to know the power of that, there were two families, contemporaries of one another, back in the early 1700s. One family were the Edwards family. Mr. Edwards was a minister, his wife. She was actually the daughter of a minister. Let me tell you, there were some studies done, or some research done, on what came out of the Edwards family lineage. Now, you may be familiar with Jonathan Edwards. That was one of their sons. Jonathan Edwards was the great awakening preacher. He preached the great sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. Literally thousands came to Christ and to repentance through his ministry during the Great Awakening. Jonathan Edwards was one of their sons, but I think they had in the teens number of children. During the next three, four, five generations, here's what came out of their heritage. There were 14 college presidents, over 100 college professors, 30 judges, over 100 members of the clergy in some manner, missionaries, pastors, or theology professors. There were over 100 lawyers. They had 60 physicians and 60 authors come out of their heritage. Obviously, that family and the heritage and the legacy that they built had a tremendous impact on the early and the ongoing history of this nation in terms of what they contributed to society. But their contemporary, the Jukes family, Mr. Jukes was a common thief. Let me tell you what came out of, in that same period of time, his heritage. 300 professional paupers, 60 thieves, 130 convicted criminals, 55 who committed acts of sexual obsession, only 20 ever learned a trade, 10 of them learned it in prison, and 7 murderers. Up to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, up to 1,000 generations of those who love me. What's the point? Is the point that all of those in the Jukes family heritage were victims to what their parents gave them and had no choices in life? Absolutely not. Every one of those were responsible for the choices they made. And each of them could have broken the cycle, but they didn't choose to do so. What is a heritage? Well, it's very simple, but very profound. A heritage is simply the spiritual, emotional, and social legacy that is passed from parent to child, whether good or bad. You see, we all receive one, good or bad, and we all give one, good or bad. So we want you to be honest. Secondly, we want you to be encouraged. And the reason is, no matter how good or bad the heritage you received was, you have within your power and God's direction the ability to give a great heritage to the next generation. Be encouraged. We share many stories of those who've broken the cycle. It can be done. It must be done. My co-author, Otis Ledbetter, is a dear friend. Otis and his wife, Gail, were teachers at the Christian college that I attended. This is a family that we were able to watch what they did and how they did things when their children were in those critical development years, and saw a family doing it right, a man who counsels scores of families through the process of building a heritage and the struggles, particularly for those who have a bad heritage. And so I'm the student, Otis is the expert. His most profound credential, however, is that both of my boys, Kyle and Sean, refer to him as Grandpa Otis. Would you welcome to the platform Grandpa Otis, please?
When you walked in, you saw this on the platform. This is an antique wedding gown. It's beautiful, the white light shining on it. My wife, when she speaks at ladies' retreats and speaks to women, she takes this with her because it represents the heritage that was passed to her from previous generations. Her parents are devout Christians, her grandparents, her great-grandparents. Same on my side, my dad, my grandparents, my great-grandparents. We were handed something symbolically like this, which was a great heritage. We're fortunate. The beauty of this, the ecru, the lace, the ruffles, all the way around the bottom, if you could see the train. Some beautiful bride wore this in the early part of this century, and it's been passed from decade to decade, and it's landed in the hands of my wife. Maybe you were given a great heritage too. Or maybe you were handed something more like this. Something that was soiled. Something that was torn. Rags. And you've wondered, like Mary, who was a streetwise drug user. She knew nothing but the streets, and she knew nothing but to turn another trick to get enough money to do some more drugs. And the day came when she got tired of the cold, and she got tired of the dirty hair and the darkened eyes and the quick, startling, darting movements that are typical of that lifestyle. And a church like this one reached out to Mary, and she did a 180-degree turn. Mary says, "I was given this. I don't have any idea what it's like to get this. Pastor, can I have that? Can my children have that?" And it's always good to be able to put a big smile on my face and say, "Yes, yes, you can." We were in a radio interview with a lady, and big tears like pearl drops rolling down her face. And she said, "You mean to tell me that I don't have to live with the past generations?" I said, "Yes, that's what I'm telling you." She said, "I've always considered myself cream colored in comparison to the white, pure heritages that others in my church have been given." We do pass a heritage. In your handout, there are several things that I've given to you. And they are definitions of the legacies. And three legacies that we are passing is a spiritual legacy, an emotional legacy, and a social legacy. The spiritual legacy is the process whereby parents model and reinforce the unseen realities of spiritual life. The unseen things like God's existence, God's voice in the life of our children and in our lives, the conscience, the moral absolutes. The last survey that was taken by George Barna said that 95% of the people in America believe in God. Well, that's encouraging until you see the next statistic that says 71% of Americans don't believe in moral absolutes. And the surprising thing to me was that when you get into the area where people consider themselves born-again Christians, 64% of those don't believe in moral absolutes. The unseen realities need to be reinforced. What has happened is we have abdicated our responsibility of teaching our children to the church or to a Christian school or to somebody else. Someone said that when the founding fathers of the Sunday school, 200 years ago, they were trying to decide whether to bring Sunday school into the churches or not, they had one great fear, and the one great fear was this: that if they began to teach children in Sunday school, that the parents would abdicate that responsibility to the church and teaching in the home would cease. Guess what? Spiritual legacy. We are passing one. And then there is the emotional legacy. The definition is an enduring sense of security and stability nurtured in an environment. And these are two key words. It's nurtured in an environment of safety and love. You can't prevent the crisis in your child's life. It's not a matter of rescue. It's a matter of rest. The emotional legacy. And then the third one is the social legacy. Giving children insights and skills that are necessary to cultivate healthy, stable relationships. My wife and I, we've raised two children. We've got one 13-year-old. Matt is 24-year-old, and he's married. When he was about 6, 7, or 8-year-old, he got into that area where all kids get, where he thought, I believe I can take Mom. I think I'll give it a try. Now, my wife is not a wait-till-you-get-home type mother. She's a choleric personality. She takes charge. But I happened to walk in this day on a conversation. And I stepped in before she said anything. I stepped in and I said, Matt, she may be your mother, but she's my wife. And I won't let anybody talk to her that way. Oh, okay. Gail and I, a few weeks later, we had a disagreement over non-essential things. And we both felt really strong about our end of the argument. So we went to the other end of the house and away from the kids, and we began to argue our case, and our voices got loud and the things got intense and the air was thick. And little blonde-haired Matt stuck his head in the door and he said, Dad, she may be your wife, but she's my mom. If you want to see your children run a successful business, don't just train them in finance and management. Teach them about people. The most significant skill you can give your child is not academic prowess or business savvy. It is the fine art of relating to people. David wrote, He decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel, which he commanded our forefathers to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children. Then they would put their trust in God. Joe walked into his house, and as usual, he was drunk, and he slapped his wife. And he said, get upstairs, do your wifely duty. With tears running down her cheeks, he emptied his passions, abusing his wife. She talked to her mother and asked some advice on how to get out of the years of abuse and decided that she would go. About the time the divorce was final, because of that incident, a child was born, a little girl. She was a single mom, and she had to do what she had to do, and she had to get a job in the daytime, and to keep her marketing skills, she had to go to school at night, and the children were alone, left in the neighborhood, left to raise themselves. There were six of them. Where did they get their values? Where did they get the teaching in those impressionable years? Because they were neglected, they weren't well kept, they perhaps didn't have good manners, and it was known around the block, and the rest of the people in the neighborhood didn't want their children playing with those children. That was then. But now that child that was born because of that abuse is grown. And even though she may have been handed something like this, she has broke the cycle and she's giving something like this. Olivia is doing a great job raising her two sons. Because two families, one in Salem, Oregon, the Pierismas saw it and reached out and said, "We have a heritage. We can help. We can give." And when Olivia went to college, even before she went to college, I was traveling for the college where I taught, and we met. She met my wife and I, and we clicked, and when she came down, we adopted her. And she watched us raise our children, and she was in our home. We gave, and she responded. We gave more, and she responded. And somebody extended a heritage to her, so that she broke the cycle to have this. I want to say to you, it's not easy if that's your case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be possible. When I look to the shores of Normandy and I see all those white crosses on the shores of Normandy, I know lying beneath those crosses are men who paid the ultimate price so that we could have freedom. They don't know the freedom that this generation is enjoying. They're gone. Why this scripture? So the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born. They in turn then would tell their children. It's because you can start it now. You can begin it now. And you can affect generations to come.
Tell this world is spinning too fast. Tell this world nothing stays.
If you want to learn more about some of the principles addressed in this talk, you can find them in a book called Your Heritage by Otis Ledbetter and Kurt Bruner. See you next time.